Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The NYPD gets its day in court. Lots of them. Maybe you heard Bob Henley's report on Morning Edition today about the $500 million or so in lawsuit payouts that the city of New York has made in the last 5 years, lawsuits filed against the NYPD. Bob was exploring why NYPD payouts have been going up while other city agencies had to pay less from lawsuits under Mayor Bloomberg. And he had this exchange with Juanita Young, who got a $10 million payout after her son, Malcolm Ferguson, was killed by the NYPD in 2000.
Now, were you surprised by the size of the award from the jury?
To be honest with you, I didn't pay it no mind, because my whole thing was that I cleared my son's name. I didn't care about the money, because I'm living these years like this, so the money was not the issue.
But is the NYPD learning the policy lessons that it might from all these suits that end in judgments or settlements, thousands of them a year? Let's take a closer look. WNYC's Bob Henley joins me now, along with Sanford Rubenstein, personal injury lawyer who has represented Abner Louima and the family of Sean Bell, among others, and Eugene O'Donnell, professor of law and police studies at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. He's a former prosecutor and police officer himself. Welcome, all of you.
Thanks.
Good morning.
And Bob, you want to tell me more about Juanita Young, who we just heard there? What happened to her son?
Well, it was a case where back in 2000, he had one run-in with the police that resulted in a significant arrest and incarceration. As Juanita tells it, he was turning his life around. He got his GED. She describes him as a mama's boy because she's legally blind. And generally, she thought he was at a positive turn in his life. He was up in the Bronx. And he got an altercation with an officer who was part of a drug enforcement unit. That altercation resulted in the officer using his handgun, one bullet to the head, killing Malcolm Ferguson. There was a follow-up review by the district attorney, Johnson, which concluded there was no criminality. The only recourse for Juanita Young in this case to clear her son's name, because the inference from the department had been that there was drugs involved, was for her to go through civil procedure. And increasingly, that's what's happening, because the CCRB, the Civilian Complaint Review Board, is broken. Right now we're at a juncture where the police department says, as they said in this program, that they're not even prosecuting internally the substantiated complaint. So the only place one can go now is the civil bar, and of course we needed it.
So in this case, for example, the officer was found
not to have any criminal liability.
Not to have criminal liability, but he did have civil liability. And did he stay on the force?
Indeed he did. But what's interesting about Juanita Young is that this kind of inspired her. She's in her later 50s. She's got four children now. This became a cause for her, losing her son, as you can imagine, and she increased her visibility and activism around this issue. Then in 2003, she was asleep in her apartment, and the police department came, and the landlord got the police to go into her apartment and take her out of her bed and arrest her for trespass.
Now, stop there, because we have another clip where she herself talks about being arrested. Let's listen.
One of the cops handcuffed me. I'm going out the door, and I'm going down the stairs. Cop is telling me to hurry up, hurry up. I guess he got mad because I was walking too slow. And the next thing, I'm walking down the stairs, and the next thing I know, I feel somebody bump me or push me, whatever, and I lost my balance, and I fell down the stairs.
So did this.
And then he's yelling at me. He's telling me to get up and get out. I said, "How am I going to open the door? And I'm handcuffed."
Did she file another
suit? What happened in this case was she was being arrested for trespass. The police officer said during his testimony in the civil procedure, he was trying to help the landlord out because the landlord told him that she'd been evicted and the landlord had reported as a burglary to get the cops there. She gets pulled out of bed, taken down to the precinct house. It turns out that there indeed was no proper eviction. She gets acquitted of the trespass charge. She gets injured in the process. She's held for, like over 30 hours, injured, and then she sues and collects $1.35 million in a jury trial.
That's a separate $1.3 million
payout. Indeed, the same individual.
To the $10 million for the death of her
son.
Before we bring in our other guests, let's do some of these numbers. How have NYPD lawsuit payments been changing under Mayor Bloomberg, and how does that compare to the rest of city government?
What's very interesting is that they have, in 2002, the total payout, and again, it's important to say that not all of these cases are for excessive force of the Juanita Young type circumstances. These are police crashes with a car, anything where they damage property, and to be fair, you're moving around 37 police officers, you're trying to protect this huge city. Things are going to get broken, and you're going to have
37,000 police officers.
Right.
Yeah. How many? What percentage, though, of these payouts are for excessive use of force?
Well, it's about 45% is excessive force. Now, in 2002,
that's thousands of excessive use of force claims.
Absolutely.
A year.
Absolutely.
That are resulting in payments.
Yeah, absolutely. And the odd part is that where there seems to be focus by the law department and the NYPD is on the big claims of $250,000 and more, but under the radar are thousands of claims that are made, considered almost de minimis, at $25,000 and under. And those are also opportunities for the police department. If this was being run like a corporation, like Mayor Bloomberg's media empire, loss prevention guys and compliance experts would be saying, okay, let's look at this. I don't care where this document came from. This is a potential clue about behavior.
Let's bring in personal injury lawyer Sanford Rubenstein. He has represented Abner Louima, is representing the Sean Bell family, among others. Mr. Rubenstein, why the disconnect, if you've explored this area, between what happens in the complaint review system and the criminal system and what happens with NYPD officers in civil court?
Well, first of all, your viewers should understand that there's a different burden of proof in criminal cases and in civil cases. In criminal cases, one has to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. In civil cases, you tip the scales of justice by a preponderance of the evidence. So we do see cases in which there may not be criminal liability with regard to the use of excessive force, but civilly, a jury does find, or there's a settlement award based on the fact that there's a belief a jury very well could find beyond by a preponderance of the evidence that there was excessive force.
We heard
the real problem here is that victims who suffer, many of them, like Abner Louima, have said publicly what they want is what happened to them, not to happen to their son or anybody else's son. So the question is, what is the NYPD doing? What is the city doing to track these cases and solve the problem of excessive use of force by police? Obviously, first, there's not adequate tracking and there's not adequate response from government to solve the problem of the use of excessive force, which not only cost the taxpayers, as we just heard, at least $250 million over the last 5 years, if you go by the numbers that we just given by the professor, but also the horrible effect it has on families who suffer the loss of the life of the victim or serious injuries.
Actually, that alleged professor was WNYC journalist Bob Henley.
Thanks for the promotion.
I promoted him.
But he's
wasn't a promotion.
He's a professor to all of us. Ed O'Donnell is a professor at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. You've been both a prosecutor and a cop. What's going on here?
Well, I think there's a research question. I think before people jump to conclusions, it is important to quantify how large the problem is. NYPD is a 37,000 member department, and they are extremely aggressive in terms of crime control, more probably than any other department in America. And the result is that the city's a pretty safe place. That said, I think they make a mistake, and any police department makes a mistake when you minimize tragedies like the one that's been alluded to this morning. And I also think sometimes police departments are a little too insular, and they're kind of resistant to criticism, and they kind of overdo it. And I think Bob makes a very good point. If you're running a restaurant and a lot of people are not happy with the restaurant, their criticism could be unreasonable, it could be unfounded, but I think most business people would say, wait a minute, there could be a kernel of truth to something that's being said here.
And I want to open the phones for police officers, former officers, anyone else currently or previously on the force or anyone else, 212-433-WNYC, lawyers, victims, anyone else who has sued and won or settled, 212-433-9692. And Eugene O'Donnell, did you want to finish a thought there?
Well, I think, that said, and I think you have to look at police department, New York City Police Department, in terms of its overall restraint on deadly force and force in general. And I think you have to look at their policies and procedures, many of which are improved because of their own introspection, but also because of lawsuits. So there are things that were done historically They've made mistakes, and they've corrected those mistakes. And if you look at the patrol guide, it's a, you know, Manhattan Yellow Pages size guide that directs cops on many, many areas. And a lot of the tragedies and mistakes you see in other parts of the country, routinely, you do not see in the New York City Police Department.
I would like to jump in here and suggest to you very simply this. There's problems with training and supervision that presently exist today. And to suggest that a death, even one death, occurs because of the use of excessive force where there's a conviction. For example, in the Zongo case, a police officer was convicted in that case of a criminal act. The judge in sentencing went pages and pages of criticism of the NYPD and the way it conducted raids. What improvements were made as a result of that judge's criticism of the NYPD?
Well, if you look at their record on a daily basis, you know, for all the hyperbole and all the headline grabbing, day in and day out, it's a pretty restrained police department. Anybody who says it doesn't know policing. This is a pretty restrained police department. And if you talk about the number of people that have been killed by police officers unlawfully in a decade and a half, it's a relatively small number, a very small number. And, of course, any number, I agree. One is too many. But let's not go painting the NYPD like it's some police department that doesn't have restraint. It is a very restrained department.
What I'm suggesting is that there has to be improvement in training and supervision. And to suggest that all is well the way it is today is burying your head in the sand.
There is, in fact, continuous improvement. But you're absolutely right that it shouldn't be taken with a grain of salt. They have awesome powers, and they should take that seriously.
Let's take a phone call. John in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Okay, how you doing?
Good. There's one part, too, that I am a cop in the Bronx. And there's a couple of things I think that have to be taken and looked at when you look at the numbers that have been paid out over the past couple of years. I think you have to remember that you have the RNC in there, which was a politically charged event. I think the city knew that they were going to be paying out lawsuits for that. And I think they decided that it was going to be better to pay out and settle those claims, knowing the ACLU was going to go after them, then allow for the RNC to get out of hand.
That's interesting. Bob, do you know if a lot of this uptick in the payouts
I think that's one
Republican convention related?
No, this has been a march that goes on. I mean, that point is well taken, and indeed I'm sure that assessment was done. But if you look at the broad sweep of history, this has been a steady growth. I mean, this was looked at by the New York City Bar Association in 2000, talking about over the last 5 years, $145 million. We see now, looking back, it's a half billion. There is an accumulative effect here of the number of claims that are going on. There's a disconnect here. I mean, for instance, you have officers who are being sworn and testifying in court, in civil court, and helping actually plaintiff's attorneys like Mr. Rubenstein win. And there's no presence of IAB as a matter of policy, Internal Affairs Bureau. There is no, it's like a disconnected universe. You could say anything.
I have to disagree with that.
John, is that John?
Yeah,
go ahead.
To disagree with that. I mean, as a working cop, Internal Affairs is everywhere.
Well, and I asked.
Every time you make an arrest that has any sort of physical contact with somebody, you're almost always going to get involved with Internal Affairs. As a matter of policy, almost on a defendant's side, almost any time a defendant is injured for any reason during an arrest, which happens, you know, it's going to happen. People don't want to be arrested, and they do resist. And as a matter of course, any time anybody is injured, they immediately file a lawsuit almost as a part of their defense.
But what I wanted to say was that you're exactly correct in terms of Internal Affairs. There's over 1,000 police officers committed. That's 1 in 37 to what you describe. What I'm describing is, once the cop is going to trial in a civil matter where he's being sued, I was told by the highest authority that they don't have a policy of having IAB present in the civil courtroom. That's what I was saying. You're correct about IAB. It is a very scrutinized department, and from that standpoint, probably one of the most regulated police forces in the country.
We're going to continue in a minute with a recorded statement that we got from the New York City Corporation Council, the city's lawyer, basically, on why they don't think that judgments or settlements and lawsuits are good guides to policy changes at the NYPD. Then we'll take more phone calls. We have police officers calling in. We have people who say they're filing suit against the NYPD right now calling in, plus Attorney Sanford Rubenstein, Eugene O'Donnell from John Jay, and WNYC's Bob Henley, who reported this story. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a few minutes, personal finance expert Alvin Hall will help give you advice on how to manage your money at the holidays and what to take stock of before year's end. But we're talking now about lawsuit payouts from the NYPD going up and not resulting in much policy change over the years of the Bloomberg administration, with WNYC's Bob Henley, Eugene O'Donnell from John Jay College, and personal injury lawyer Sanford Rubenstein, who has represented Abner Louima, the Sean Bell family, and others. And in a minute, we'll also bring in someone who manages this kind of risk for the LAPD. But, Bob, one of your main points is to question in your story how much policy change is taking place and how much is not as a result of lessons learned from lawsuits. And here is Gail Donahue from the city's Corporation Council office, which represents city government in these lawsuits.
Generally speaking, lawsuits are not a good source of information for making policy changes because there's significant disagreement about what actually happened in the case. They can be useful, though, if they show a pattern of some kind. When they do, the law department examines the facts in those cases and brings whatever issues there might be to the NYPD's attention. This communication between the law department and the NYPD has been very productive in addressing risk management issues.
Attorney Sanford Rubenstein, does she have a point about lawsuits not being a good guide for policy change because the facts are so often disputed?
When the city is paying out $250 million in the last 5 years as the result of the lawsuits, then not to do more than is presently being done is not in the city's best interest. Right now, there's a tri-level governmental commission headed by Senator Malcolm Smith, members of the city council, the state legislature, and Congress, making legislative recommendations for change to try to deal with the problem of excessive use of force by police. There must be more done on a city level, perhaps a blue ribbon panel appointed by the mayor to look at this issue, because at the end of the day, the victims who suffer, who get the payouts, they'd rather not get the payouts and suffer. They'd rather not have the problem.
But Bob Henley, she was saying, in effect, that a blue ribbon commission appointed by the mayor is one thing because they look at departmental issues systematically. Just pulling a piece of wool here from a lawsuit, a piece of wool there from another lawsuit, does not good policy make.
I think what's interesting here is that the department, there is kind of a disconnect. I've heard from police department sources that they're not entirely thrilled with the claims that get settled de minimis. I'll give you an example of some of the things that have come back to me through the department. Someone who is, steals a purse, runs into an apartment, and there's a friend in there who's helping them hide from the police. The police follow in hot pursuit, get into the apartment. The friend turns the lights on and off so that the police can't apprehend the person who's got the purse. The police make the arrest both individuals. Down the line, the prosecutor decides in the real world of law and order that they have to go through, have the accessory, who's involved with a lesser crime, turn against his friend and testify against him. They will not prosecute the case of the guy who's flashing the lights on and off. That individual, according to the police, went and sued and collected. So all I'm saying to you is that
so
it's
in
a
other
system
words,
problem.
The department will say there, and Attorney Rubenstein, you can react to this, the department will say, look, we settle a lot of cases with cash that we think are completely without merit. It's cheaper for us and easier for us to settle the cases
but
than
data
go
points.
Fight every
they're
single
data
one
points.
In court.
What I'm saying is that all of these things are data points. And in Los Angeles, we'll hear later on from the commander, they look at every complaint, every piece of paper that's filed as a potential indicator of a problem.
Briefly, you know, Mr. Rubenstein?
I was just, for every case like the one you just explained, there's another one like a photographer I just represented from a very reputable newspaper who collected $75,000 because he suffered excessive use of force by police when he was just doing his job taking photographs. So for every example he gives, which tries to demonstrate that the city perhaps shouldn't have paid, there's 100 examples where the city does pay because they're worried that a jury would even pay more.
Also with us now, Stuart Maislin, commanding officer for risk management with the LAPD. Commander Maislin, thanks for getting up early for us. Hello from New York.
Good morning.
What do you do as a risk manager, that is, someone who tries to minimize the amount that the city will be liable for lawsuit payments for the police department?
Well, one of the things we do, we work hand-in-hand with the city attorney's office. I have approximately 40 detectives that work as partners with the city attorneys, or in some cases outside counsel, to defend the lawsuits that are filed against the city, against the police department. And we start looking at these incidents actually when the government claim for damage is first filed. And we look to see, did we do things right? Did we do things wrong? Should we pay them at that stage before they even become a lawsuit?
So you're telling me that you have a staff working full-time at the LAPD on lawsuit claims, looking for policy implications from individual suits?
Well, that's certainly part of it, because we will look at we have to look at what we did. You know, did we do the right thing? Did we do the wrong thing? Could we do it better to prevent this from occurring another time? And so we're always looking for improvement. So every claim filed, every lawsuit filed, from start to finish, as we learn more information about the incident, we're looking, well, are there any policy or procedure issues that we need to fix that we can improve upon? Or, in some cases, do we need to make some wholesale changes?
Can you give me a couple of examples of policy changes that have resulted from individual lawsuits in L.A.?
Well, you know, I don't like to say individual lawsuits, because what we try and do is, you know, the lawsuit may be the starting point to look at a policy or a procedure that we do, and we have done that. And, for example, we've seen some things, our policies for shooting and moving vehicles. We're currently looking at our SWAT tactics because of a very tragic incident that occurred, I believe it was a year or so ago. We found some problems with our training and dealing with CPR training. We've had other issues in our driving policies in response to emergency calls for service. By looking at our employment lawsuits, we've seen some major Fair Labor Standards Act issues dealing with our overtime policies and procedures.
We're gonna try to get you back on a better line, but that's all really very interesting information. And Eugene O'Donnell, former cop, former prosecutor, now at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, do you think that there's anything going on in the NYPD that's as organized as that sounds in L.A. regarding learning from lawsuits?
I'm sure that there is an ongoing effort to improve policies. The Corporation Council does investigate and does have a mechanism that's similar to what the commander described. I think the real question is how well information is exchanged in such a large bureaucracy, and that probably could be improved. I would say, however, there are things that Chief Braddon had to change when he went to L.A. that NYPD had already changed. For example, the pursuit policy. He had to address that issue when he went to L.A. L.A. was lagging NYPD. So NYPD has a lot of cutting-edge policies and has a lot of policies of restraint, but that can always be improved, and it shouldn't be minimized. And anyone who says that it's not a big deal when force is used when it shouldn't be or somebody's injured, they're missing the point.
Let me play another clip of the spokeswoman for the New York City Corporation Council's office, Gail Donahue, on how the NYPD does try to improve policy.
The NYPD has vigorous internal disciplinary system, which aims to identify risk and discipline misconduct. It also introduces new training programs to address existing or potential problems. For example, several years ago, the NYPD hosted a series of roundtable meetings with advocates, mental health experts, and community members in which the interactions between police officers and emotionally challenged people were discussed. As a result of those meetings, the department revised its training for how police officers respond in such situations.
And Eugene O'Donnell, I'm not sure that was the greatest example for her to trot out right now, that they improve their procedures for dealing with mentally disturbed individuals, considering what just happened with Kyle Coppin. But what lesson do you take from that statement?
Well, the fact is they have actually improved their mental health training, and even though I personally think it should be directed away from the police, if you go to John Jay, you'll see our police recruits, the new recruits, they go for 2 days of training on how to deal with the emotionally disturbed. It's very creative. It involves actors acting out, and it's been found to be very effective training. It's obviously not a panacea, and obviously we've had some real tragedies, but that is, it's not fair to say that's not an issue they don't think about every day. They do spend a lot of time worrying about emotionally disturbed first response and also emergency service, the way they respond to those calls.
Bob Henley, what about the larger thought in that statement?
Well, I think that the bottom line here is that we have a huge bureaucracy, and we have the civil litigation is an opportunity that every day is producing insights into how policing is done, and that we need to look deeper at them and take them more seriously because that's still the law. I have picked up a kind of dismissal, quite frankly, I think even from the mainstream media, that, oh, it was a Bronx jury that awarded a woman of color a lot of money. No surprise there. There's a kind of cynicism. The civil court should count for something in terms of being having some standard, although, of course, as the attorney said, Mr. Rubenstein, about the preponderance of evidence, it still is something that was proven in court and should have a life beyond just the fact that the city then tries to get the person down to the lowest settlement possible.
This is WNYC. Brian Lehrer with you as we talk about lawsuit payouts from the NYPD going up and not resulting in much policy change with WNYC's Bob Henley, Eugene O'Donnell from John Jay College, and personal injury lawyer Sanford Rubenstein, who has represented Abner Louima, the family of Sean Bell, and others. And let's take another call. Evelyn in Clinton Hill, you're on WNYC. Hello, Evelyn.
Hello.
What's your story?
Well, my husband and I, my husband is also an attorney, were assaulted by a Sergeant Stephen Talvey on June 21st of this year. And I've heard a lot of discussion.
We'll say allegedly, especially since you named a name, but go ahead.
Well, you can say allegedly, but I know what happened, so I'm saying that it occurred. And I've heard the discussion here about how people can be injured during the process of arrest, but there was no reason for us to be arrested, and we were assaulted before we were arrested. I think the real problem is that there isn't any political will to hold police officers accountable. And until there is, they will continue to do what they're doing. And that's compounded by the fact that even if there is a civil lawsuit, there's no real consequence to them.
But you heard the police officer who called in from the Bronx who felt like there's an internal affairs officer looking over his and other cops' shoulders at every turn. And I'm sure he would also say that there's incredible media scrutiny of so many incidents with the NYPD and, if anything, too much of a rush to judgment when there's an incident.
And I would disagree with him. First of all, there isn't a real media scrutiny. My husband and I are two practicing attorneys who represent victims of police brutality. There was minor coverage in the Daily News and the Post. The New York Times did not address it at all, as if it didn't happen. Our incident occurred at the intersection of a major thoroughfare in Brooklyn at 5:45 p.m., so this is during rush hour, and there were scores of people outside. There was a McDonald's on the corner.
I have a question. Again, I believe I covered some of the press conference. Was the incident where you were trying to intervene on the behalf of a young man?
We were not trying to intervene. We were stuck in traffic when we saw the police apprehend the young man. We stepped outside of our vehicle where we saw him lying prone on the ground, handcuffed, and he was being kicked by the police officers.
I'm familiar with the case. I guess the thing here is it is true that there is a lack of coverage on these issues in the sense that these trials, civil trials, happen all the time. I mean, here's a case where Juanita Young collects in the same year $10 million and then $1.3 million 3 months apart from each other, and it was smaller than a birth announcement in the tabloids, kind of like she hit the lottery as opposed to a potential clue.
And again, in fairness to the officer in the particular incident we just heard about, we got one side of the story there. We're not getting the other side today. Eugene O'Donnell, what about that? I guess the on the media question, if there are these thousands of payouts taking place every year based on excessive use of force claims, and yet only one story every once in a while, for whatever reason, confluence of things, Sean Bell, because it was his wedding day and 50 shots, and, you know, another here and there, Kyle Coppin, but there are these thousands of judgments or settlements. How good a job do you think the media is doing?
Well, it might very well be, as your caller says, that the political will is lacking. I think the backdrop of this is that the city used to be a very dangerous place, and it's sad to say this, but it's a reality that I think a lot of people were traumatized in the 80s and 90s with levels of crime that was astronomical. And if you look around the country now, you see cities that have one or two or three really bad murders every week. So I think there's a little bit of almost post-traumatic kind of recovery as a result of that. and maybe there's a less of a willingness to be critical of the police. That said, don't for a minute think the cops don't worry about civilian complaints in the CCRB process. Mm-hmm. If you talk to cops, they're absolutely obsessed about that. Final thing I would say is that this is an area that is kind of well proven. The third-party intervener, if you will, in these incidents, there's a history of that person being arrested, and that's probably an area there should be more training on. Obviously, you can't obstruct the police when they're trying to make an arrest, but you can observe them. And sometimes, and not just in New York, but in other cities, sometimes some police will turn on the third-party person.
We got to go in a minute, but Attorney Rubenstein, here's a post on our comments page, and anyone else, you can post and keep this conversation going at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Someone writes, simple solution. Don't use or limit the amount of taxpayer dollars to pay out these settlements. No wonder they're so free with the money. It ain't coming out of their pockets. Make the department pay personally. I guess they mean the officers and commanders pay personally. And you'll see a big change in practices.
I had one case in which the city required a police officer to pay part of a settlement.
Really?
The real problem is the fact that not enough people are talking about it. This show is an example. For the first time, I've been doing civil rights cases representing victims for many years. This is the first time I've ever done any kind of media address specifically on the problem of excessive use of force by police and the amount of payouts. The truth of the matter is we're shining a light on the problem by talking about it today. Let's make sure we don't stop talking about it, because ultimately government has to do something to address the issue of excessive force of police in this city. It's a real problem.
I just also wanted to say that in my national research, this is a national problem.
I agree.
On a scale that is in the billions of dollars, and I think it should be required that any municipality that takes federal money for any reason post a simple caption on a website every year describing the payout.
Shining the media light on this is WNYC's Bob Henley. You can see a link to his original report on this from Morning Edition today right on the homepage at WNYC.org. And keep posting to our comments page as you click on Brian Lehr Show. Attorney Sanford Rubenstein, John Jay College Professor Eugene O'Donnell, WNYC's Bob Henley, thank you all very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
Brian Lehr on WNYC coming up in a minute. Personal finance expert Alvin Hall with what you should do about your money before the end of the year. Stay with us. And coming up later in the program, what you and your kids said to each other last night about the baseball steroids report. You can post about that in advance at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And we'll talk to former Yankees pitcher Jim Bowden. Stay tuned.